X7A. Number 3A.
We left the subject yesterday at the point when we were discussing the nature of idea in relation to error or to illusion, and have seen that an idea has within itself the power of correcting any kind of erroneous situation, because an erroneous situation is always the outcome, the effect of a erroneous consciousness. And in the measure as we fill our consciousness with ideas, in that measure mortal consciousness loses its foothold, has no more room within our consciousness, and therefore cannot really anymore manifest itself in our lives and on our body. We have seen that this applies not only individually to the individual, but also collectively and universally, that the idea is sweeping down the centuries, that the idea is always moving and moving, and in its course of spiritual development is taking care of all those erroneous concepts in the world, not only in the individual, but also in world consciousness, so that the idea has its impact on world consciousness, so that within world consciousness, erroneous thinking, erroneous consciousness yields to the divine idea. This we call then culture, civilization. We call that the advancement of the ages, or whatever the term may be. It is that which shows why evolution was possible at all. Evolution, even in the material, as we know, there is a terrific evolution going on from the first living cell up to what is called today mortal man. And so also in the cultural way, we have a great rise of civilization, which we can witness wherever thought has been receptive enough to be transparent and receive it. This is something which we should, I think, keep in mind constantly, in order that we feel that our work in this world is big with blessing. We may not see the immediate effect in our lives, but what we are engaged in is much bigger than to demonstrate something terrific in our lives, but that where we are engaged in seeing that the whole idea, the divine idea, is moving so that it breaks through mortal resistance, through ignorance, apathy, and is bringing forth an ever higher idea. We have also seen that the thinkers of today are recognizing that they are recognizing that progress has not come about by the thinker, but that progressive thinkers have come about because the idea of God is moving and is using them. And so if we open up our consciousness really to the divine idea, we will be used by the divine idea to bring forth new vision. See, it was the mistake of theology to think that the Bible is the last word, and that with the Bible, revelation has come to an end. And one can't help wondering to see the courage that Mrs. Eddy must have had to state that she has received a new revelation, and she received it not from the Bible, but from God direct, and then could go back to the Bible and see that the Bible would substantiate her revelation, that it is not against the Bible or contrary to the Bible, not conflicting with the Bible, but that her ideas were, so to say, adumbrated in the Bible, but that now she could bring forth the scientific presentation of the spiritual idea, and therefore was so much under criticism from the scholastic theology, because they believed with the Bible everything ended, God was dead afterwards, he has no more an idea, he could no more bring forth a new idea, no more enlarge on the idea. My word, what a courage this woman must have had to stand up against that whole world and say, nonsense, revelation goes on and on and on and on. And here is the new revelation in the language of her day. And I think the great point she was bringing out was to show that this idea is going on and on and on, and therefore was revealing to us that each one is a revelator and can be a revelator and must be a revelator if we do not want to circumscribe and limit the divine idea. The divine idea goes on and on through sweeping down the centuries. So we witness this idea as that, as we have seen yesterday, that illumines heaven and earth. We must see that this idea is actually omnipotent not only in the realm of truth, but also in the realm of error. That's what makes the divine idea to be the Christ idea, the saving idea, the healing idea. If the idea would only be omnipotent in the realm of truth, it wouldn't be a saving idea. It would just be a revelatory idea. Is that the right term? A revelatory idea and not so much a saving idea. She says, especially in those last chapter in Apocalypse, she speaks a lot about the office of the divine idea being omnipotent in the realm of error. She says that the spiritual idea, which is clad with the radiance of spiritual truth and that matter, is put under her feet. You can see how that whole idea really can control matter and is, you see, it's no more mind over matter, mind small m over matter. It's now idea over matter. It is now showing that if we have a right concept of idea, that this is the answer really to matter. And if we would have lots and lots and lots of time, I could go into this question, which is most interesting, to see how even today the physicists and natural scientists begin to see that the answer to matter as a structural concept is actually idea as a structural concept. If we have time, I may touch on it a little bit more. But just to show where we are spiritually in the present age, that what Mrs. Eddy 100 years ago was presenting is now becoming a worldwide problem, not in Christian Science alone, but in the world. And we must see that Christian Science is not a denomination that just belongs to a few Christian scientists who study the Christian Science textbook, but that Christian Science is a worldwide idea of science with a Christian touch, with a saving, healing office. And that idea is all over the world. That idea belongs to all nations and to all races and to all religions and is at work as an idea. An idea can never be circumscribed in a denomination. And when one begins to see that, one begins to see the enormous signs of the times that are coming up all over the place, showing that actually, as in this case, that matter is put under the feet of the spiritual idea. She shows in that chapter on Apocalypse the working of the spiritual idea, and that is shown by the healing of the sick and sinning, and by manifesting the light which shines unto a perfect day. Can you see? She always gives those two aspects. Says the idea is omnipotent in truth and is omnipotent in the realm of error. She gives that it is healing the sick and sinning, and in the same sentence goes on and manifests the light which shines unto a perfect day. So we have suddenly to see the office of an idea in quite a different dimension than just to see the holiness of the idea per se, the sanctity of the idea per se, the completeness of the idea per se, but also see that one aspect of the idea is that it is omnipotent in the realm of error. Quite a different aspect. So we can see that we must have a multi-dimensional or structural concept of idea, and not just an idea as if it would be some... I never can get quite the right terms. Perhaps there is even... not even a right term, a feeling that an idea is not just an amorphous spiritual substance, something like that. It's not a substantialistic concept of idea which we should get, but much more that the great multidimensional aspect of the idea with its various offices that touch every dimension of thought. Therefore, she would show in that chapter on Apocalypse, great is the idea and the travail is portentous. Can you see how she shows not only the inner nature of the idea as being great as the infinite, but also having within itself the office of working out the new birth of any new situation. And so I just hint these passages to make you aware when you study, say, the term idea in the textbook, that one is quite aware of all the various shades and offices of the term idea. I go to the next subtitle here, that idea transforms itself. See, again, a sense that an idea is not just a substantialistic concept, but that an idea has the ability within itself to transform and translate itself according to the situation, and therefore appear in all various ways and forms, so that it is not just a thing and that's that. It is so many things. For instance, we are quite surprised to see that an idea can change itself into a mental idea. Because she says, spirit gives the true mental idea. And you can see what she wants to show, that spirit God is that which has an idea, and that idea is always spiritual for spirit, never mental, because for spirit, nothing can be mental, because mental means from mentality, from the Greek mentality, mentalis. Now you call it different because you pronounce the Latin different than we do. Does anybody know Latin? Mental comes from the Latin word mentalis, mental, yes. Well, you know it. Huh? So think of it. For spirit, an idea is always spiritual, never mental. But it transforms itself to us as a mental idea, because it comes to us in a different way, even touching the mental realm, and says, here I transform the mental concept you have into a mental idea, which is naturally that, what we so often say, that we say, this is God's thought. God's thought is nothing else but God's idea translated to the point of the mental, of thinking, and therefore appearing in the form of thoughts. Or she shows how the idea transforms itself when she says, we must get a correct sense of the highest visible idea of the divine principle. You can see an idea is never visible for principle, because principle has no physical testimony. Principle has no eyes to see. And yet she says here that we must get the correct sense of the highest visible idea. And this is naturally, when she talks about Jesus and also about Paul, she would use such terms to show that an idea has even the ability to translate itself even to that plane of thought where it becomes physically visible. That Jesus was physically visible to the eyes. Paul was physically visible to the eyes. So that you can see that an idea translates itself even to visibility, so to say. Others hear the idea or feel the idea, whereas God neither sees nor hears nor feels. These are anthropomorphic attributes which we give to God, but God doesn't see. That's a way of speaking that we have, that we say God sees everything, you see, but naturally God doesn't see, because in order to see you must have eyes. See is a symbol which would say that God is aware of itself, but we can see that if an idea has to be Christian, therefore healing, therefore saving, it must have the ability to translate itself and transform itself and transform itself to any state of consciousness, even to that of the physical senses. I point this out because these passages are rather rare in the textbook, and therefore when they are rare, we may not notice them and may get the feeling, well, an idea is spiritual and therefore an idea is not visible. We would say, well, an idea is not visible. You can't see an idea. But she says so. And therefore we must see what the explanation of it is. An idea, naturally, because it is not material, is not materially visible, but the idea can transform itself into that form that is even visible, like with Jesus, I would say, like with Mrs. Eddy, like with anybody. That's why she calls Jesus the highest human corporeal concept of the divine idea, meaning that the divine idea even can translate itself into a human corporeal concept. And that is what is necessary, or the idea would not have a Christ. If the idea has a Christ, which means if the idea is that which takes care of every situation, it naturally must have that translating, transforming, overturning, overturning, and overturning office that shows that even the material has to give way to the highest, and it's visible. We can see it. Of Paul, she also says to misunderstand Paul was to be ignorant of the divine idea he taught. So the divine idea he taught is invisible. That divine idea he taught is God's idea. But that divine idea translated itself in the consciousness of Paul to that point that it showed itself forth so that everybody could recognize what Paul was, what Paul is. So that we can see all those biblical figures, actually, the glossary shows that, but all those biblical figures which may have been persons, people, but because they were imbibed by the Divine Spirit could use them and transform them and transform them, that they were showing forth even the highest corporeal concept of the divine idea. And this is what we have to see, or else we become absolutists, we become mystics, if we always just feel, well, the divine idea will do it, and the divine idea is all there is, and and that's true, and have a feeling that it does not translate itself into human, corporeal manifestation, then if we think that way, then we are never willing to be that human corporeal concept of the divine idea, and therefore are absolutists and are shutting us out of the saving activity of the idea. She says about Jesus that the impersonation of the spiritual idea, see, she even shows the impersonation of the spiritual idea, that the spiritual idea even can show itself forth as the person, like Jesus, that it had a brief history in the earthly life of our Master. The divine idea has not a brief history. The divine idea has an eternal history. But the divine idea, because it's not just an amorphous, substantial thing, but is a structural thing with all dimension, with all offices, has the ability to translate itself constantly to the requirements of the age, to the requirements of the situation, into and project itself into the human corporeal plane. Or else the human could not be saved. Yes. All right. We come to the next point. Idea is a dynamic structure. Yes. I was talking about this for quite a while. And perhaps now I just can recapitulate from various statements from the textbook what I mean, perhaps, by that sense. That an idea is not just just an item. I wonder if anybody would ever find out an expression for what I want to say, you know, to give the wrong sense of what one thinks an idea is. Huh? I would call it perhaps an atomistic sense of idea. You know, idea and atomistic, an atomistic sense of an idea, which means it is something which has not more component parts, but just one. Atom means it cannot be split again. And whereas idea has so many aspects, so multidimensional, that we have to see it that way. For instance, she would speak about the idea, say, from the point of mind, she would say that mind presents the idea. How? First in light, see, and then it changes again and says second in reflection, then it changes again and says third in immortal forms of beauty and goodness. You see how the idea just takes on new forms, how mind forms the idea. But when we say mind forms the idea, it does not mean like if we form out of clay a statue, and then that is that statue. Mind forms an idea, but that form is a constant transformation and revolution of the idea. So it is first in light, second in reflection, and third in immortal forms of beauty and goodness. It's a constant dynamic creation. That's how an idea is presented. Mind presents it first. Then it shows that spirit takes that idea and is unfolding its own immortal idea. Unfolding. Unfolding means, well, if you take a seed, and then if a seed unfolds to a little plant and then to a flower and so on, you see that it changes constantly its outward form, its gestalt, and is not always a seed. A seed is not always a seed. So, can you see, we get away from the atomistic sense of idea and see that spirit takes the idea and gives to that idea constant unfoldment, evolution, development, and within that evolution it takes on new forms, new offices, has to do different things. Truth evolves, she says, its own unerring idea. Then she shows, from the point of view of soul, she shows that the intelligent individual idea is rising from the lesser to the greater. Can you see that an idea is rising from the lesser to the greater? It isn't just that. Do you get the feeling what I want to say whenever I come to that point where I can't express it? It shows an idea is not just a little idea. It says, no, the idea is rising from the lesser to the greater. Yes, it's rising from the lesser to the greater and unfolds the infinitude of God. Can you see?